So you want to get a lot of email subscribers, but you've got no time for blogging, no budget for ads, and no one knows who the crap you are. This is the interview for you.
You're listening to Inbox Besties, the only little guy approved podcast that gives you dangerously practical advice for turning internet randos into subscribers with benefits. You know, the kind that pop open their wallets and throw fistfuls of cash at you for your courses and coaching, not like that other stuff. Perv. Now let's get to it.
What is up, my inbox besties, besties? Kate Doster here of katedoster.com. And as always, I'm super excited to be in your ear holes. So I am a little bit under the weather when I'm recording this intro and outro, but do not worry, in our amazing interview with entrepreneur extraordinaire Bailey Richards, who is the queen of running online summits, which I'll tell you about in a second, is crystal clear. I was fine there and not getting attacked by the pollen bugs like I am right now. So I'm going to actually keep this intro short, and we're actually going to do our wrap up either, because I really want you to take and digest what she says in this interview and actually go ahead and do so. And really the first step of actually like getting onto this virtual summit bandwagon is by actually checking out how one is run as a viewer, which is why I'm going to encourage you to head on over to katedoster.com/info summit. If you're listening to this in real time, next week, the Infopreneur Summit, which your girl Kate is talking on Wednesday, All About Welcome series is going live. Bailey has gathered over 50 plus industry leaders and a lot of names that you probably haven't heard of quite yet talk about their area of expertise. And I have to say, when I find any hidden gem or someone that I didn't know about, those interviews I feel are always so much more powerful because people, I don't want to say they have more to prove, but because they have more to prove, they give way more juicy tips, way more how. It's not fluffy at all. So without further ado, guys, let's go ahead and talk to Bailey Richards of BaileyRichards.com in the Infopreneur Summit interview, guys. And I will see you guys next week. All right, guys. So my inbox besties, let's go ahead and welcome Bailey, the mastermind behind the Infopreneur Summit, which I am so excited to be speaking on, guys, on April 25th. That's the actual date of my interview going live, but it actually starts next Monday, guys. So make sure you head on over to katedoster.com/infopreneur to get your amazing free ticket. Bailey, just welcome. And is there anything else that you want to let our audience know about you that might not be in the intro? Any fun facts? Go ahead and let us know now.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm super excited to talk more about summits with you. I think that it's going to really blow your audience away. No, I mean, I think that the intro kind of lays down exactly who I am and what I do today. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about this, but it was a long journey to get here, but it's an honor to be a coach.
Yay. So yes, how she must be a listener, guys, of our show. So I would love to know a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey before we dive into summits, particularly how you feel it works for list building. And guys, you know, Bailey is actually talking about summits in her actual little lesson that she's having in the Entrepreneur Summit. So I'm sure she'll go more into depth into that than we can possibly cover. So make sure you head on over to the link in the show notes. But how did you actually get into the online space? Like, were you always sort of into this? Were you always entrepreneurial? Like, what's your origin story, Bailey?
Sure. So I think that growing up, I was always a sort of entrepreneurial individual, though I really didn't understand at all what that meant. I was blessed to have a few role models. My grandfather and my dad owned their own businesses, but I was not guided down that path, actually. That was not something that I was encouraged to do. I was encouraged to follow the educational path because I always succeeded and excelled at academics. And so I was taught to kind of follow the American dream that so many of us are taught, that if you do really well in school and you work really hard and you get good grades and you'll get a job and then you work for 40 years, and then one day you'll retire with the White House and the picket fence. And so that's exactly what I was doing. So I actually was high school valedictorian. I got a scholarship to go to a university called Rensselaer in New York to study engineering. It's actually our nation's oldest engineering college. And then after that, wound up in California for a few years working the 9-to-5 consulting grind as an environmental engineer. And it really did not take me long to realize that this is not what I wanted for the rest of my life. In fact, I opened up about this for the very first time during my TEDx talk in TEDx Harrisburg in 2016, a few years after it happened. But around the age of 25, I was living in California and I actually started having a quarter life crisis. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's like a midlife crisis when you're 25. But basically, I actually started having panic attacks and really visceral reactions when I started to think about my future. And I just saw my life ahead of me for like the next many decades and thought, wow, this is not actually where I wanted to be. And it really, really scared me. So that visceral, those visceral reactions that I was happening, that was happening to me is what drove me to take action. And so maybe I am still a little bit of an engineer at heart because I sat down and I wrote a list and I was like, this is what I want out of my life. I want to be able to travel more. I want to make this much money. I want to be able to see my family more because they were living on the other side of the country for me at the time. I want to develop, I want to have more time to do my philanthropic work. Just so many different things. Use my creative side more. You'll be surrounded by these types of people. And so I just really looked at that list and said, I think the only way I'm ever going to accomplish this is if I work for myself. I can't be working a 9-to-5 under somebody else's control in a cubicle anymore. It's just, it's never going to happen. I just knew that. And so that's when I started getting into the online world initially. I did start, you know, exploring it and discovering it whenever I was an employee. Then I actually made a commitment and a decision to leave my 9-to-5 job to pursue an education in entrepreneurship. So I decided that I needed to be closer to family and move back to the East Coast. So I enrolled at MIT and I studied entrepreneurship there for 2 years. And that's really where I built my business and went full-time into self-employment after I graduated.
Oh, there's so many notes that I have here, guys. You can probably hear my pencil marks scratching up while we're talking about this. But I think that it is a really interesting story. So you're not the first guest to be like, my family was entrepreneurial, but they didn't want me to get in it. I feel like pretty much everyone who had an entrepreneurial family, they literally said the same exact thing. And I feel like it's usually just to sort of, you know, shelter us and keep us safe. And they know that the ups and downs can be really hard to stomach mentally. But I love just how open you were about the anxiety and the stress, which is ironic because here on this show last year, I talked about how my business literally killed me. So I feel like mental health is definitely something that if we ever have you back on the show, I would absolutely love to discuss. But I love how you went sort of, I'd call it an untraditional route when it comes to entrepreneurship, probably because everyone is sort of like, I don't want to say Gary V brainwashed, but like Gary V is very much like you're either good at school or you're good at entrepreneurship. Very like rich dad, poor dad. Like you don't need education. You just need to get out there. And I think that it's really cool that you sort of knew yourself and you're like, you know what? If I want to build this bridge, I need to be educated. So I'm going to take education as a step, as opposed to just like quitting your job, moving back home and starting a business. So I really enjoy how like self-realized that you were, guys, and sort of know your strengths.
Can I make a comment about that?
Yeah, go right ahead.
So I do appreciate your observation there because that's definitely a part of the story was that, okay, I need to get some education in this and I definitely need to figure this out. And of course, in addition to the formal education that I received, the online self-education that I did was really valuable. So I want to do a couple things here. First of all, I want to make it clear to everyone listening that you don't have to have a degree from MIT to succeed in business. That's what I did, but I also learned greatly and benefited greatly from the people online that were my role models and my coaches and things like that. So there are assets well out of traditional academia, and that's not the only route. But the other thing I really wanted to point out is that it wasn't just the education that made me want to go back to school. It was also a recognition that I was having difficulty achieving what I wanted to in my business, even in those early days, working a 9-to-5, and that I needed a more flexible solution. And I thought, I think that college or going back to grad school could help provide that to me because, as we all know, you know, a 9-to-5, that's why it's called a 9-to-5. You're sitting in that cubicle for, you know, 7, 8, 9 hours a day. But with university, it's very different. Your schedule is so much more flexible, especially when you're in grad school. Mm-hmm. And I also want to point out to people that I did not pay for my education because MIT is a research university. So I leveraged the engineering background that I had to get into a university where I could have my education paid for because I was doing research at the school. And then I specifically pursued an educational track and took a lot of classes at the Sloan School of Management at MIT, which is probably not what a lot of people in my situation would actually have done. So I had a plan. I didn't just say, you know, well, I want to get an education this, I'm going to spend $100,000 and try to make it up later. It was very strategic in the research that I did, the decisions that I made, where the school was located, what it was going to offer me, what programs they had, all this sort of stuff really went into it. So it was the right solution for me at the time. It definitely, you know, my life has changed since then. I've purchased a home and I do a lot of travel and lots of things have happened. So who knows if that would be the right decision for me today. But back then it was the right decision, and everyone needs to consider their own situations and try to figure out a way that's going to make it work for you.
Yes, yes, yes. The reason why I loved it, and it was literally like the second that Bailey and I connected, which was over the Entrepreneur Summit, like literally her dedication to like what she sets out a plan. Bailey goes, not that she would ever use this term, but she goes balls to the walls with thing. We were talking about how she wanted to travel more. So she went out and got LASIK so she didn't have to worry about glasses or contact lenses. Like that is someone who just like, she knows what she wants and she goes for it. That is why I love Bailey. Like if anybody ever asks, like, how do you know Bailey would make it? I'm like, it's that story, which is so random. But to me, it just shows so much about your integrity and your character. And I love how, like you said, there's a million different ways to entrepreneurship, guys. I do have one other question before we kind of go in to summits and how they work and industries that we think it works in and which ones maybe, you know, you really do need a mentor for. I would love to know, if you don't mind sharing, you don't have to, but what were some of the early mentors or coaches or things that you were listening to? I just always find it interesting. I feel like there's a couple of online entrepreneurs that are like the gateway drug. Gary Vee is usually one of them, but like, I want to know, like, did Bailey actually take any other gateway drugs in entrepreneurship? So who would you feel are like your early mentors or coaches or people that you turn to?
So there's one person I can definitely point to. Her name is Natalie Sisson. I think she's from New Zealand. She calls herself the suitcase entrepreneur. And she, because I love travel, I don't actually talk about this in my brand almost at all. If you went to my website, you would not see like all those travel photos of me on beaches and stuff like that, because I don't want people to think that you have to travel to be an entrepreneur or an infopreneur, as I call my audience members. And so, you know, if you are a mom that has three kids and you just want to do info products because you need more time, you know, you need more money and you want more freedom and all that, that's great. And I want to cater to them as well. And so I do travel a lot, but I don't really talk about that in my personal brand so much. But Natalie Sisson is all about that. She's called herself a suitcase entrepreneur, for goodness sake. So she really just talks about how, you know, starting a business. And she, of course, teaches on info products as well, but her brand is a lot broader. She teaches about services and so many other things as well. But she talks about basically, she leverages the idea of lifestyle freedom and ultimate travel and traveling around the world and stuff as like the incentive to want to build a business. And so that was very appealing to me whenever I was getting started. And we did have a chance to connect many years later. I basically called her up and was like, thanks so much for the inspiration. Look at what I'm doing now. And we had a cool little chat about it. So it was really neat to get to be inspired by her.
Yay. Okay. So the gateway drug, in case you guys have not been listening to Inbox Besties for too long, it's normally Pat Flynn, for the record. Somehow everyone always seems to land on Smart Paths of Income first. And then we're like, oh yeah, I used to listen to Pat Flynn like all the time.
Yeah. And I feel like, of course, Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Work Week, which yes, yeah. I did read. Ironically, I actually picked up that book in an airport like years and years and years ago when it first came out. I was literally browsing through an airport and I saw it and I was like, the 4-Hour Work Week, that sounds amazing. bought the book and was like, oh, I see what's going on here. And that was, I mean, that was so early on. That was literally before, I mean, when was that? 2008, 2009, something like that. Like that was before like a lot of this stuff even happened for me. So that was a long time ago.
Right. It's always so interesting. You sit back and you look at it and it's like, huh. But yeah, it's usually one of a couple entry points. And you're right. Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week is definitely in there. So I would love to actually talk a little bit more about, you said that your people are called infopreneurs. Like, can you explain like what that means, what they sell? Like how does that actually fit? What is an infopreneur?
Sure. So really important thing here for anybody building a business, whether it's an online business or not, is that you need to make people feel like they're a part of a community and a tribe. And one of the best ways you can do that is by giving them a name. And so the name for my audience members are infopreneurs. And that's based around this concept of infopreneurship, which is what I teach and what I've built my whole business around. I even call myself a business coach for infopreneurs. And basically, it's exactly what it sounds like. Infopreneur, information, entrepreneurship, creating and selling information, product. products and services. So on the product side, we have things like books and ebooks, online courses, things like that. And then on the services side, it might be like coaching someone, or maybe it's kind of a mix of both, where you do a summit or a mastermind or a workshop or a presentation or something like that. And basically the whole concept is that you, as the business owner, as the infopreneur, you will leverage your own life experience, knowledge, and passions to teach something to somebody else. And one of the coolest things that I get to do as a business coach is meet all of these incredible clients of mine that have these experiences, skills, and knowledge in just the most interesting niches. I have somebody who I worked with a few years ago who was is an origami artist. He actually is self-taught, but he does all these amazing like paper folding designs, and we worked with him to set up a personal brand and get him, he has a book and he does, you know, brand sponsorship type things. I mean, it's really cool what he does. Somebody else that I worked with is a hair care expert, has a degree in cosmetology or a certificate in cosmetology, and works with women to teach them how to take care of their hair properly. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Somebody that I'm working with right now is a professional bowler, and I'm working with her to do a virtual summit and a personal brand all around her bowling expertise and being an advocate for youth bowlers and teaching bowling to other people. Teaching people how they can win tournaments and get scholarships for college as bowlers and all this other sort of stuff. So literally every single person that I meet every single day, this is no lie. Do you want to hear this? Today, yes. Just today.
Yes, I do.
Somebody this morning called me up and we had a potential client call, strategy call, and he wants to do a virtual summit all about slime. Because apparently there's this movement, I've just been introduced to this literally today on YouTube, of like people that make slime, like blue slime and pink slime and like stuff at home. And like young kids love it. And it's like this whole thing. And he wants to like build a community of like parents and kids and like supportive at home, like homeschool environment, that sort of stuff. So this whole thing, but my point is that literally every single day, like I meet these interesting people that come to me and have these like passions for something or these like experiences in something, or, and it's just totally off the wall. Sometimes you would never think about it. And it's just insane to me, but I love it. Cause I love hearing when a client calls me and they're just like, I've got this passion for this thing and I have to get it out into the world. I literally can't contain it anymore. And to me, that is just the most exciting thing. And I think infopreneurship is one of the best ways that we can do that.
I absolutely love that. And I always agree that usually like most people in other industries are like, as you guys know, more B2C, so business to consumer. So things like slime, things like bowling, since most of the people in those industries don't necessarily take the time to learn proper marketing strategies and funnels and copies. When you are a person that goes into those sort of undiscovered, not super popular niches, you can really make a huge impact and income because you know how to do these things correctly.
Yes. Yes.
And like that sort of red ocean, everyone's hopping in on this bandwagon type of a thing. But I do know about the slime. I know that some people make like $300 a pop selling their slimes. Usually they're YouTube influencers. So it's very fun. Yeah. But you had mentioned that the slime guy and the bowling lady had both come to you because they wanted to do virtual summits. What is a virtual summit exactly?
A virtual summit is basically an online event, a conference basically online, where you as the host are going to be bringing together a whole bunch of your friends, colleagues, peers in within your own niche, experts in their own right on a particular subject. And they're all going to come together to share information, usually in an interview type form, with your collective audiences. So basically, you as the host are going to reach out to a whole bunch of people, say, hey, can I interview you for my summit? You will then go and interview those individuals. You will show those recordings online during your summit for a limited period of time. And everybody together is going to bring together their own audiences to watch these interviews. And so you'll try to advertise and spread the word on social media through your email lists, all that sort of stuff. For a business owner, virtual summits can be an incredibly fantastic way to grow your business in many different facets. You can grow your email list because you're all bringing everybody on the summit, all the speakers and the host, you're all bringing your audience members together to register for this event. And so you'll get exposure to new audiences and can grow your email list that way. You can bring in money from a summit by selling something we call the All Access Pass, which is the content on the summit. You sell lifetime access to the summit content. You're obviously growing your network because maybe instead of just reaching out to your friends or current peers, you cold outreach to some people that you didn't necessarily know before and try to form some new connections. And then just the visibility that you get as being an event host online and being a collaborator with all of these individuals and getting your face seen on all of these videos for hours and hours to all of these different people will bring you a lot of exposure in your niche and then also a lot of really new and cool opportunities. Maybe somebody will see you on your summit and invite you on a podcast to be interviewed, or they'll approach you about doing a guest blog post exchange or something like that. And those opportunities that go well beyond the summit itself are what really helps your business grow and grow.
Excellent. So, and we'll go ahead and we'll talk a little bit about the logistics. Like I said, guys, Bailey is actually talking more about how you can actually run these virtual summits on her virtual summit, the Infopreneur Summit, which head on over to katedosser.com/infopreneur, guys, to go ahead and get the link for that. If it is after like the 25th, I think is the last day. Am I correct? April 25th. Yes. Guys, don't worry. Bailey has got some other fun goodies that you can actually learn more about running your own virtual summits from as well. There'll be links to that in the show notes. We'll talk about those at the end of the show as well. And so I have a lot of questions, but a very limited time because Bailey's a very busy lady. And I guess my first question is, I can definitely see the benefits, like you said, about the visibility piece. I think the networking piece is huge, but like, how would you recommend that people start reaching out to people? I guess, you know what, let's even back up. If someone like has listened to this interview and they're like, Bailey knows what she's talking about, I want all those things, a bigger email list, more revenue, actually getting recognized in my industry, where should they actually start when it comes to a virtual summit? Like, are there any industries that are good for this or bad for this? What have you seen in your expert opinion?
Okay, so it's just like you said a few minutes ago, that people can really make bank in some of those niches where actually a lot of these, you know, info products and summits and these concepts really haven't been brought to yet. And so a lot of times people approach me and they'll say, well, I think this is really cool and I want to do this, but nothing's ever been done in my industry like this before. And I'm like, that's exactly why you need to do it. That's exactly why you'll be successful, because you are going to bring some new, you know, something novel, something new into your industry. But that doesn't mean that you can't do it in an industry that's a little bit more crowded. Obviously, I'm in the coaching niche, and yet my summit is in its fourth year now, and we've been successful every single year. So it can work for both. So here's really what it comes down to, is it comes down to, do you have enough peers that you could actually ask to be a part of your summit as guest speakers, first of all? So if you're in such a specific niche that you cannot think of 15 to 30 people to actually join you as speakers, well, that's going to be a problem because you got to have other people. But then the other thing that's going to determine whether or not it's going to be a success is whether those speakers themselves have audiences that you can then benefit from. So do they have their own email list? Do they have their own platform that they can share your event on? So a lot of people come to me and they'll say something like, well, I've written out my list of guest speakers or the people I want to invite. And I'll look on it and it's like 7 professors. And I'll say, well, that's really cool that you want to invite them on because I'm sure they're really good at what they do. They're very intelligent and have a lot of credibility in the field. But usually a professor at a university doesn't have their own personal brand and their own business and their own email list. And, you know, they're not in the digital marketing game. And so it's not necessarily going to be beneficial to you if you're trying to make money and grow your email list and grow your audience and your social media following and all that to have those guest speakers on. So those are some of the things I would say initially that you kind of need to think about.
If I walked over to your laptop, how many tabs are I see open? 1, 2, 27. And let's be real, you're probably listening to this podcast with one earbud in and you're driving or doing the dishes, but secretly you're mapping out your next new course, which will definitely propel you to 6 figures and beyond, unlike those 8 other half-finished stinker courses that are just clogging up your hard drive on your computer. Those things are going nowhere. But then you remember you haven't actually done a blog post in like 2 months, so you should probably do that, but your traffic's like 5, so that really doesn't matter that much, especially since you're now getting the red arrow of death from your Facebook business page. So clearly you now need to do a live, but you've got to clean up the house and make sure that the kids aren't around and get that done. So then maybe you'll go back to the course, but then I don't know about the blog post, but like, it's really going to be that effective. And then you just get so frazzled and so overwhelmed, they just like, screw it, I'm watching the Gilmore Girls again. Hashtag Team Jess forever. The problem is that you're trying to run your business from a pretty notebook that you got from Target that you've lost, and the scrap pieces of paper that you now use to kind of make up for it, which have a never-ending to-do list that never gets done because you're so scattered. What you need is a simple system that was created for somebody like you, an uber-passionate, super-scattered, shiny-object-prone creative entrepreneur with a passion for business, but organization's not really your strong point. Created by somebody who actually gets it, the most anti-type A personality that there is, me. What you need is Trelling for Traffic. Trelling for Traffic is literally your business in a box. See, unlike that pretty notebook that we still can't find, Trelling for Traffic actually comes with boards and workflows that you can use to run your business. I'm talking about breaking down everything into the nitty-grittiest, smallest parts so nothing slips through the cracks. Everything from what you need to do when with a mega launch to how to use Pinterest without actually having to pay for a scheduler. And of course, my favorite, how to plan out your quarter, week, and day. Because if I'm looking at everything in my week, I'm going to skip around. That's why my day board is my favorite. Now, to get your hands on all of these 22 boards and 15 workflows, which have been called life-changing by not one, but several of the 100 students that invested in this course the first 3 days it was open. Craziness, right? Head on over to trellingfortraffic.com. That's trellingfortraffic.com. And guys, I didn't even tell you the best part. It's only 24 bucks. Isn't your sanity worth 24 bucks? Especially when I'll give you that recognition and revenue that your business deserves. So head on over to trellingfortraffic.com right now.
So when you said to have enough peers, so if we are shooting to get, you know, between 15, 30 speakers, I do feel like for a first time summiter, perhaps 30 speakers, organizing all their schedules might freak them out a little bit. But if I'm looking to have a summit, very tight knit, about 15 speakers, how many people should I reach out to? Should I reach out to 30 and hope for 15? Should I be reaching out to like 50, 60, especially if I am sort of a little bit newer in the game or might not have as much a credibility out in the field?
Okay, so the first thing you need to know is that you definitely will end up reaching out to more people than you will have on your summit. And you should not be worried about that or take offense when people say no. It's just business. And I've reached out to lots of people that couldn't be on my summit in some years. They end up coming back and being guest speakers in later years because sometimes the timing and stuff doesn't work out. So don't take it personally. You have to realize that you are going to end up reaching out to more than will say yes. Now, that doesn't mean that you want to reach out to 50 people all at once on one day. Not only will that be really overwhelming for you and your inbox, but it's quite possible that maybe you only wanted to have 20 speakers, but all 40 of those 50 say yes. Well, geez, then what are you going to do? You know, so you have a little bit of an issue there. So what I would recommend is that you actually create your list of speakers first, and then before you even reach out to them, think a little bit about how you want to organize them on your summit. You know, maybe pick your top 15 and say, okay, these are the first 15 that I'm going to reach out to. And if all 15 said yes, this is kind of how I would organize them. These three talking about these topics on day one, these talking about these topics on day two. It's not going to work out like that, but that will help you figure out as people start to say yes, where your content gaps are. Because you could reach out to those first 15 folks and then maybe, I don't know, if you're lucky, 10 might say yes. So then you'll look at those 5 empty spots and you'll say, okay, of all those spots, like we have a lot of people that I wanted to originally invite on to talk on Instagram or how to teach on Instagram, and they all said no. I need then to look at my list of other potential speakers and find those other Instagram experts that I had brainstormed and invite them. Because on our summits, we really don't want to have too many speakers that are all talking about the same thing, because then it just gets a little boring and repetitive. So you have to be strategic about your invitations.
I can definitely agree to that. I think we've all been to summits where it's like there's 5 people talking about the same thing. It's like how are they going to be different? And it ultimately just sort of hurts and confuses everyone else, because as someone who is speaking at a summit, you do kind of want to be like we were just talking about, not in that red ocean of like, now I need to stand out from all these other people that talked about my topic, but like, okay, I went to summit A, I'm the person that speaks about B. Now everyone who went to that summit, when they think of whatever that topic is, they think of you. So that's how it can benefit some people as the speaker. So I really like that. I do have one other question, if you don't necessarily mind sharing. You were talking about how the summit is a great way to grow your email list. And obviously it's because, like you said, you're having everyone sort of promote. So I would assume that you probably have some promotion guidelines. Do you actually have
like audience guidelines, or do you just sort of, can you tell before you reach out to someone personally, if you're like, you know what, I bet that their audience size is about what I'm looking for, or like, is there any sort of factors that you look into there?
Okay. So I actually have really strong feelings about this. So I'm so glad that you asked me. I am somebody that teaches summits, but I also get invited to be on summits a lot. And I can personally tell you that I reject like most of my summit invitations. And the reason why is because people are not doing it the right way. They're not trying to actually build relationships. They're only out there just trying to scam me for my email list. So here's how it often works, is that I will get a random email from someone that I've never met before. And the email will say something super generic in the beginning. Hey, Bailey, I absolutely love what you do. You are the best. And I'm putting on this amazing summit, and I want you to be a speaker. I want to feature you and your expertise. And then they will go into all of the requirements to be a speaker. I've never met this person before. I have no idea what they do. They haven't said anything about why they think I would be a good speaker or why I would be a good fit for their event. I don't even know a lot of information about their event yet. And most importantly, they're making this assumption that I've already said yes. They've not actually asked me if I want to say yes.
Right.
They'll go into all of these requirements. Like, you have to have an email list size of 5,000 people. It's basically saying, like, in the beginning of the email, we want you so badly to be a guest speaker, but wait, we only want you if you're going to do this for us. And that's just a turn off. So they'll say, you have to have an email list size of this big. You have to be willing to promote this many times to your email list. And it's just so transactional. It's not about building relationships whatsoever. And then the worst thing that people do is at the very end, when they're like, you can schedule your interview here. I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. Those emails are straight in the trash. Even if I'm slightly interested, sometimes I'll do a little research about the person and I'm going to see, are they on my email list? Like, have they ever commented on my blog? Are they even in my free Facebook group? Have they ever bought one of my products? Not that a purchase would make me say yes or no, but I want to know how involved they are with my business already. Or did they just Google? Like, if they were looking for an expert to speak on their summit about summits, for example, did they just Google and then find me and then reach out without ever doing any research whatsoever? So it's so critically important that you just pursue those relationships. And I know that people are probably thinking, well, then Bailey, how do we know they're going to promote? How do we know that we're going to get the benefits? I am telling you right now that if you put relationships first always, and that if you don't make demands, but if you provide value up front from your speakers, they're going to turn around and share it. So if you just come in with this attitude of gratitude that they're even doing you a favor by being on the summit, which by the way, they are, your speakers are giving you their time to do that interview. You wouldn't even have a summit if they weren't willing to say yes to you. But if you put that gratitude first and you constantly promote them to your audience and you show them value and here, let me, you know, you can give away a lead magnet on my summit and how else can I feature you? And like, let's give you some more exposure. They're going to see that you're the real deal. And then they're going to want to turn around and share your event with the audience. So I don't have any requirements for people's email list sizes. For me, it's so much more about the content that people deliver. Now, it's true that I am looking for people that have, you know, actual audiences built up. Like we were talking about with the professors, if somebody just started their business yesterday and has no email list, it's not going to be terribly beneficial to me. And it's true that I actually might have some people like that on my summit because I think the content that they can provide far outweighs the audience members that they might bring. But for the most part, what I'm actually looking for are what I call the mid-level or B-level influencers. So we have basically A, B, and C. A-level is like the Gary Vaynerchuk, Russell Brunson, people of the world that are so rich and famous that they're not going to promote your event because they don't need to, right?
That's like the Bailey's of the world.
Oh, I don't know about me, but you definitely don't want to worry about having them on your summit because even though they might provide a little bit of credibility to your event, you know, they're not going to promote and they're not going to bring anything to the event. So it's kind of a little bit of a waste. Now, if Russell Brunson said, hey, do you want to interview me? I would say yes. I'm not going to turn that opportunity down. But at the same time, I'm not counting on it for anything. I'm not counting on it whatsoever, you know, for him to promote to his millions of followers or anything. So I think that's where a lot of people get a little delusional. They think, oh, if I can just get Gary Vee, he'll promote and then I'll be set for life. And that is so not how it works at all. and then the C levels are those people that started their business yesterday. You know, they have no email list that are just getting started. And then you have the B levels, and that's exactly where you want to be going after, which are people that are not super famous like, you know, Russell and Gary, but that have a really great audience that follows them, that loves them, that is going to take action based on what they say. And that might be an email list of 5,000 or 10,000 or 15,000. You know, it depends on what your industry is, but that's really what you're looking for. And by the way, this ranking system, it's not derogatory in any way. Like, you can be a C-level influencer and you can be amazing at what you do, but just because you just got started, that's what makes you at the C lower level, is because you just haven't built anything yet, because you just got started yesterday. You might go from C-level to A-level in a year because you're so amazing at what you do and you're able to leverage certain, you know, things in your business like summits and certain marketing techniques properly. So it's really not about that. It's just a way for us to recognize that some people are farther along in their journey than others. And that's kind of where we want to be looking for speakers.
I absolutely love all this. You're dropping all of the info, guys, all the info. I'm so excited. So I've got like two-ish, three-ish more questions. One is really just a comment. For the record, guys, with Russell Brunson, Bailey not only ran his summit, which I'm guessing it's probably because her summit is so amazing, which I can definitely appreciate as a speaker, how organized and how far in advance Bailey starts planning out things, and her communication skills are amazing. So like, that's one. So Russell could talk to it. She also talked on stage about running virtual summits at Funnel Hacking Live, which is very, very exciting. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of recognition there that, like, you are sort of being known as the virtual summit person, but how did you stumble upon virtual summits, and how did you decide, you know what, like this is what I'm going to go all in on?
Well, I had actually seen other people doing summits for a few years before I decided to do my own. And I had actually been a speaker on a couple of other people's summits as well. So I knew some virtual summit hosts. And I've always been open about the fact I didn't invent summits. They've been around, you know, for a pretty long time before I started getting into the summit game. What I think I bring to the table is a really clear pathway for especially how beginners can do summits if you've never done one before. And that's the situation that I found myself in whenever I was starting my coaching business. So before I was a coach, I was an infopreneur in a different niche. And that's where I kind of got my, what did they say? Got my chops, something like that.
Cut your teeth. Cut my teeth. Was it like, was it slime? You can like,
That would have been cool. No, not surprisingly, it was the travel niche.
You got your journalism skills.
Yeah, my journalism skills. I was not one of those like, oh, you know, Instagram travel bloggers. I always put that out there because I feel like people start picturing me like, you know, with like taking selfies on beaches or something. And that's just so not how it was at all. I was doing info products about travel. So I was primarily serving college students who were going abroad for the first time. And I was writing books, doing courses about like, this is a passport. This is a visa. Here's why you need one. And I made a lot of money with college partnerships and other things. And that was, and I did a lot of public speaking around colleges because that was my primary target audience. But anyway, after a few years, I decided to morph into coaching and officially switched over full-time in 2015 because of a need. I just saw so many people asking me about how I was doing courses and self-publishing books and making money online and doing all this other kind of stuff. And so I never did a summit whenever I was in the travel industry. And then I decided to do one basically as a way to almost launch my coaching business. I mean, it was officially launched before I did my first summit, but it really helped me just take it to the next level because my travel people, my college students that I was serving in the travel niche was 100% a separate audience from the people that I was serving in my business coaching business. And so that was the issue, was that I was a C-level influencer when I was just getting started, right? I have all this knowledge in my head. Like, here's how I can teach everyone about info products and stuff, but I didn't have any of the assets that I needed. I had no email list. I had no connections. No one knew who I was. So I was basically just starting from scratch all over again. And I was like, okay, how am I going to be able to get this to a level of sustainable success quickly? And so I started, you know, naming all the different things I wanted. All right, I need more email subscribers. I need more sales. I need more connections. I need more this. And I was already doing so many of the other things in business you're supposed to do, blogging, getting on podcast interviews, all that stuff. And those are great things. I mean, I still do them and you should still do them. But I wanted something else, like a bigger kind of launch event that was going to help me actually get to a higher level faster. And I knew from my own previous experience that if I just launched a product, like if I just wrote a book or something, it wasn't going to help me because I didn't have the audience to sell it to. And that's whenever I started considering doing a summit and decided to finally take the leap, did it, had amazing results, realized that this was such a powerful but yet totally underutilized marketing technique for other infopreneurs out there, and decided to put together my own 3-month 12-step system and teach other people about how they can do summits as well.
So you had mentioned about the 3-month system, and I know obviously like you'll go about this in the summit yourself, and you have a whole course that lays out literally like everything, guys, like everything, because this is the way that Bailey's mind works. I think being an engineer really does help make you an even better course creator, because you can think of everything both granularly and like the 360 degree view of everything. So I love that. But would you say that it takes people probably about 3 months to get this going? You know, when you first started, was it just you? You know, do you have a team? I know now that the Infopreneur Summit sort of has taken on its brand of itself. Like, do you have a lot of people working behind the scenes with you, or is it just like you and maybe like a VA? I would love to know what it takes to put this on teammate wise.
Yeah. So I think I would actually surprise most people in telling them that it's mostly me, and that I do have some independent contractors that will help me do some things like the transcriptions or a little bit of the video editing or subtitling or something like that. Because when you're interviewing 50 plus speakers on your summit, which is what I'm doing now, and I don't recommend for any beginner because that's way too many people.
It
turns into a lot of content that you do need a little bit of help with. But definitely in the beginning, it was all just me. There was no hired help whatsoever. There was no staff. And I firmly believe that a lot of infopreneurs can still succeed that way. And I think that one of the things that is really dangerous about any type of launch is the overhead, right? A lot of people end up kind of in the red before they even launch because they've spent so much money on, you know, their additional staff and all that sort of stuff. And I think I believe in kind of running lean in businesses, at least until you reach a certain revenue level, but that's a conversation for another day.
We could definitely talk about that, because I wholeheartedly agree with that profits first, lean, mean model.
Yeah.
As I'm going to say, maybe too much to a fault. Bit of a perfectionist, who am I to say?
I think it's really important for people to recognize that there is a certain amount of trial and error that has to come into your business first to determine its overall level of profitability from an organic standpoint. If you can't grow a 6-figure business organically, you're never going to be able to scale it to 1 million with paid ads because your numbers just aren't right. You're going to bleed too much money because you don't have the level of profitability that you need. So I think that the same thing kind of goes for summits, is that one of the things that I see a lot of people doing is just, you know, they just spend so, and this goes for course launches and book launches and everything else. They just spend so much money up front, and then they finally launch, and then they spend the first, you know, 2 months trying to just recoup their sales and break even, right? And then it's really damaging when they don't have a plan for the back end. So, okay. And I see this a lot with summits too, is that people spend so much time on the summit itself. And so they're focused on getting the email list and selling the all access pass, which is the front end offer. And they don't have any plan for what's going to happen afterwards. So then they have this brand new email list, which is super warm and hot and ready to buy. But then they let that email list go cold. They don't even communicate with that new email list for like 3 or 4 weeks because they're a little burned out, honestly. And then they kind of jump back into the game, you know, a month later, and have their email list unsubscribes. Like, they just went through all this work to get all these new people on their list, and now half of them leave because they didn't do a good job of nurturing and keeping up. And so that happens a lot, unfortunately, too.
Yeah. As a speaker, guys, I can tell you that if you do get invited to these summits, or even if you are hosting this yourself, encourage your speakers to really have an aftermath plan, as I call it. So like, kind of like Bailey, like at least every other week, it's like, I would love to have you on this summit. It's like the most generic thing ever. But when I do agree to the certain handful, maybe like 4 or 5 a year max that I go to, I always make sure that I have an action plan for those subscribers. Because like Bailey said, they are red hot. And Bailey allows your speakers, and you would probably do this too if you're running your own, you allow your speakers to be able to promote a freebie. So that way it's actually beneficial for them. It's not just all about the host. So I feel like we could talk about this forever. I do have just like a couple more questions, if you don't mind sharing, because I know you've been doing this for a while and you can give rough estimates. But how many email subscribers have you gotten from summits? Like, from, you can give us like a range from like the first year, like, oh, I added 500 people to my list, to like now, what would you project would be the amount of subscribers you would get for the summit or from the summit?
Yeah, I have absolutely no problem sharing all this because one of my core values in my business is transparency. And I actually write up a full case study from every single one of my summits. And every single year I do a profit report. I started doing that a couple of years ago in my business to like let people know how the thing makes money and how I did and where I went wrong or what needs fixed. And I feel like that those are huge learning opportunities. So as far as email subscribers, I don't have the reports in front of me right now, but I know my numbers in general. So as far as email subscribers go, the first year, I think it was around 1,000 people. And then last year it was about 3,400 new email subscribers that were not already on my list. Mm-hmm. And that was with 45-ish speakers, 43-ish speakers, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. So are the reports, are these only for your students or for the people who go to the summits? Or are these like public, like income reports, people can see these?
No, they're public. You can go to my blog. That's where I post them.
All right, guys. So we'll make sure that we have those in the show notes, because I know everyone's kind of interested in this stuff just like I am. So Bailey, I mean, I could literally talk to you forever and ever, but the time that we're recording this, the summit's just about to go live. For the record, guys, I'm just saying, if you really want to win over your speakers, Bailey gave us swag, which are these really cool hats that you'll probably be seeing my children wear, because for some reason I just can't pull off a hat to save my life. But Bailey like really has gone above and beyond to make her speakers feel like they're the most important thing and not like that she's out for our lists or our community. So I think that's why you're so successful and why everyone's like, oh, I want to be in Bailey's summit. She's the best.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I do work really hard to make my speakers feel like they're valued, because I've definitely been on the other side of things. And I know exactly how it feels to be seen as just, you know, a resource that somebody can tap into and not a real person running a business.
Exactly. So where else can people get a hold of you? Obviously, we have links to the actual summit, the Infopreneur Summit. You guys can see how it's run. I don't like the term funnel hack, but if you kind of want to see what Bailey's doing, definitely sign up for this. I mean, we've got some amazing speakers here, guys. They're covering everything from chatbots. I'm talking about list building. I'm talking about welcome series. Bailey is talking about summits, obviously. Our friend Naima of the podcast, she's talking about evaluating revenue streams. We've got corporate sponsorships, adding coaching services. I mean, membership sites. It just goes on and on and on, guys. Like, really head on over to katedoster.com/infopreneur. There's literally something for everyone. And I wish we had had a little bit more time to talk about interviews, but I definitely need to let you go. I'm sure you cover that more so in your course. But if it is beyond the registration period for the Infopreneur Summit, since this only comes around once a year, where else can people hang out with you, get to know you, all that juicy goodness?
Great. Thanks for asking. Yeah. People can head over to baileyrichert.com, which is my main website. And that's kind of a hub for everything else, where they can find links to grab my free toolkit, sign up for a training and free resource kit about virtual summits at virtualsummitschool.com. There's lots of really cool infopreneur resources on my blog. Like you said, we'll link to that, but yeah, you can find all of that just by going to baileyrichert.com.
Oh, so excited. Thank you so much, Bailey. I appreciate your time. Do you have any like parting words for our little guys who are trying to make a dent in the big, bold online world? What do you have for them?
I think that just to say, when we talked about doing summits, a lot of people often come to me and they say, well, there's no way that I could possibly do something like that because I'm not super established and I don't have a gigantic email list already, or I don't have a huge network of speakers. And I look at them and I just want to grab their shoulders and shake them a little bit and say, well, that's exactly the point. You know, doing a summit is going to help you get all of those things at literally breakneck speed. You know, you could just blog and blog and blog your fingers off for years and years and years and try to build up that audience. And there's nothing wrong with that, but doing some launches like a summit where you're, you know, bringing in a lot of the audience members and resources from other people in your niche and making those connections is going to help you get to that level of success a lot faster. So if you're thinking to yourself, well, this sounds great, but I'm too much of a beginner, or I'm not established enough yet, or you know, there's absolutely nothing stopping you from doing this, because I know I'm living proof. That's exactly what I did as a way to grow my business over the past couple of years when I was getting started. So from C-level influencer 4 or 5 years ago to A-level influencer working with Russell Brunson, I honestly have to credit virtual summits with so much of that success. So it's definitely worth checking out, even if you're a beginner.
Yay, I love it so much. Thank you again so much, guys. And we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you for having Inbox Besties in your ear holes today. Why don't we make it a regular thing? Go ahead and slap that subscribe button now. And for even more free value-soaked resources and a community of online entrepreneurs that actually get it, head on over to katedoster.com/group to unlock your free membership to the Super Friends Secret Lair. And if you were one of my action takers listening over here on iTunes, thanks. Make sure that you leave a rating and review before you leave. I know it seems teeny tiny, but it makes a big world of difference in me being able to provide you with more dangerously practical tips and tricks for turning internet randos into subscribers with benefits. Later days.